Sustainability is no longer about doing less harm, but about doing more good. My guest today has a resume to be admired in this area. Tennille Lawrence, founder of Little Birdie Hair Co., is not only a leader in her industry, but the proud recipient of the title of Australia's Best Eco Salon in 2020 and 2021. Tennille's amazing story of juggling single motherhood, business ownership, domestic violence, and chemical poisoning is one of survival and passion. This is a business conversation that needs to be had. Come join Tennille and I. You're going to love it. I'm Amy Bajada, CPA by trade, not in nature, now financial coach to businesses globally. The Boring Shit You Need to Know in Business podcast was created with business owners and aspiring business owners in mind. It's a way to bring you simple yet effective business strategies, explore the art of being in business, and challenge the notion that our financial numbers are boring. If you're looking to improve your profitability, increase your cash, and grow your business, you're in the right place. Join me and other business owners as we discuss the boring shit you need to know in business. Hey, Tennille, it is so great to have you.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
I'm so excited to have you here. We have so much, or I've certainly got so many questions that I want to unpack with you. So let's jump straight in. I'm a big fan of startup stories, but this ain't no average startup story. I'm sure you'll agree. Especially with young children in tow, we're going to need to unpack this one. So you've been in the industry, I believe, for over 20 years. Of which 6 years has been with Little Birdie Hair Co. Is that correct?
That's correct. Yep, that's correct.
Before we get to Little Birdie Hair Co., I believe there's a big story before that. And because Little Birdie Hair Co. is inspiring in itself, I wanted to give it its own airtime. But for now, take me back to getting started firstly in the industry and then the journey that led you to opening your first store.
Okay. Started off hairdressing at the age of 14. And I just started hairdressing because it was the only thing I could get out of school for to do work experience. I didn't want to do the school sports carnival because I'm definitely not sporty. So chose to do hairdressing and got offered an apprenticeship. And here I am pretty much. So had done that and finished my apprenticeship. And wasn't long after that, I had sort of paved my way to be quite a good colorist and had been offered a job as a technical educator. So had done that. And during that time had also started my first business at the age of 19, I believe, and was doing education as a bit of a side hustle. And managed to do that pretty much for about 10 to 12 years straight, as well as owning salons. So
tell me your first business. Was your first business a hairdressing salon?
Yes, it was. Yes, it was actually a mobile hairdressing business because that was like a huge thing in the early 2000s was mobile hairdressing. So I decided pretty much as soon as I finished my apprenticeship that I would go and be a mobile hairdresser. And I was very, very green and very, very naive and would go into strangers' homes and do their hair. Strangely, that became quite a big business for me and I became super busy and super booked out. And from there on in, I had a small child. Not long after that, I had my first daughter, and not long after that, started my first salon, like in salon store, and all kind of just rolled on from there.
Can I talk to the educational piece? Because I love that. Like, I'm an educator myself. I've always loved education and it was certainly the path I wanted to go down no matter what I was doing in terms of on the tools. How did that come about? Like, so you're obviously gaining a reputation for being a great colorist. How does the education component come about in your world?
I did a lot of stage work back then for particular color companies that I was using in the salon at the time, and a couple of companies had approached me and asked would I do some work on stage for them, and would I do some private education. And it was a bit of, hey, we'll give you a bit of free color if you do a bit of stage work for us. And at that stage, I was building my business and pretty broke, so I was keen to do that. And from then on, they were like, hey, would you consider doing one day a week on the road for us, as well as having the salon? And back then, the money was like amazing. And I was buying tubes of color for like this super, super minimal price. So I kept doing it for 10 years and just, yeah, it just skyballed essentially. So yeah, I ended up doing it for 12 years.
Yeah.
And that led me to some amazing things. I got to travel the world. I saw many countries that I probably would have never seen and got to cut hair in places I would have never dreamt of cutting hair. So I was very, very fortunate.
What an amazing experience to be going through at such a young age, right? So here you are trying to establish yourself just from a career that you stumbled upon because you wanted to get out of one thing that wasn't right for you and into another. We'll get further down the track in a moment, but here you are traveling the world, being an educator, doing all the things that you love. Can I go back to something that you've just said though? You know, being in business is hard, and obviously starting a mobile business would have required a little bit of capital, like a fair bit of capital to get started.
Yes.
Tell me about that process, because here you are trying to get something off the ground. There's a little bit of capital. How did you go about really getting that off the ground?
I had no capital. I was, I think, 21 years old or maybe 20. I spent all my money on shoes and handbags. I had no idea about business. I think at the time I borrowed it off my parents. Both of my parents have had their business now for 40 years, and my mum is a bookkeeper. So I had borrowed the money off her and hustled whatever I had left. And yeah, so that's how I did it. And from then on, I just sort of made it work somehow. I look back now and I'm like, how did I do that? But I made it work.
So you mentioned that your parents had businesses of their own. Was that a catalyst for you getting some confidence about that being your natural progression as a business owner?
Yeah, definitely. I think growing up and seeing my parents having their own business, I never envisioned not working for myself. It was never in my life plan to be on wages. I always thought I would own my own business. And even now, I can't ever envision my life working for someone else. It's just in my blood, I guess, that I would always be my own boss.
And they would have been great cheerleaders for you and great support having done it all themselves.
Absolutely. They still are. My mom comments on everything on Instagram and Facebook. She's my biggest fan.
My mom does the same. And she actually, it's funny you say that, because she said to me the other day, I don't know what else I've got to come up with. I'm like, Mom, you don't have to try so hard. It's okay. Like, she just wants
very sweet. Very sweet. My mom's the first comment on everything.
Yeah, great. I agree. So your mum's a bookkeeper.
Yes.
Did that help you in terms of running your business, or did you just have that in you as well, you know, the business acumen and being able to build a business with your financials?
It definitely did help me to a certain extent, because she would pull in the reins a lot. Like I said, being 20 and 21, I had absolutely no idea what I was doing, and I was spending money like there was no tomorrow on things I definitely shouldn't have been spending money on. So my mum would pull the reins in and be like, you shouldn't be doing that. You can't be doing that. It got to the certain extent. And obviously my mum was doing my bookkeeping for free because she's my mum. And that was really helpful until my business grew too much. And this little free job was like, hey, this free job is like now a full-time job. And then I was like, Mum, it's okay. I'll get a proper bookkeeper now. It was good to a certain extent. We used to fight a lot over the books as well, because she'd be like, just give me 2 hours to sit down and we'll go through these bank records. And I'd be like, oh, please, Mum, like, I just don't want to do it. I've been cutting hair all day. So probably I'd say a lot of things to my mum I would never say to her. A proper bookkeeper. Yeah.
Well, that's an interesting topic, actually. And I guess one close to my heart, being a financial coach myself, is given that it's not your thing, back then I can understand you had the support of your mum, someone you completely trusted with absolutely everything. Now, having evolved as a business owner, if I can just touch on this very briefly, do you get involved with your numbers? Maybe not the nuts and bolts of it, maybe not bank reconciliations, but do you get involved with your numbers on a regular basis as a business owner?
Absolutely. It's something I'm very involved in. I do have a CFO who manages pretty much everything for me, but I can tell you every number down to my dollar figure by the hour. And if I didn't, I think I wouldn't have so much control in my business. I don't work on the floor as such anymore, so I don't do hair anymore, but I am very much in control of what I make per hour, where my money goes, when it comes in. And it does keep me awake at nighttime because my brain runs a million miles an hour, but I love reports. I love knowing where everything goes. I love working it out. I find it fascinating.
Wow, I love hearing that. really, I'm such a nerd. That gets me so excited when I hear business owners that have transitioned from understanding that it's not just bookkeeping, it's not just bank reconciliations, it's so much more than that. And you can really make a business so much more if you know more about that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I love it. I love it.
So you've got some young kids and that's part of your story and you're running businesses. Tell me about Little Birdie Co. How did that all come about?
Well, when I was doing education, I was working overseas as well at the same time and was also doing a lot of work after hours because education during hair salons generally happens after hours. And I did have some small children and my mom was looking after the kids a lot for me. Thank you, Mum. She does live 5 houses up the road from me. And I had just come out of a very bad relationship and had filed for bankruptcy because my partner had left me in some very bad financial ruins. And I had to repay that debt. And so the only thing I could do was to start up doing hair at home. I didn't have a salon at the time. I'd sold it a couple of years before. And I bought this house and we had converted the garage as such into this beautiful salon. It had a beautiful concrete floor. It was magnificent. And I thought I would just do my old faithful 20-year clients that I'd done forever and my family and my friends. And the salon was called Little Birdie because all my neighbors kept knocking on my front door saying, a little birdie told me that you were a hairdresser and that you could possibly color my hair. And at that time, I didn't want to do any hair because I was still doing education as well. And it was my daytime job and I was exhausted. And I just was like, I just want to do maybe like 3 clients a week and, you know, and that was it. But it just, I think I had half the street coming over. I still live in that street. Half the street now works for me. Literally, I have three. I think I have 2 girls that live in the street now work for me. But that's how Little Birdie came about. So it grew from being my garage to 3 people. And now I have in one salon, I have 28 chairs. I think it's phenomenal. So it's a nice feeling.
Yeah. That story about the name. It is such a cool name. And I love the story behind those sorts of things. But Little Birdie Co, let's really unpack this now because you've just been named, or for 2020 and 2021, you were named Australia's Best Eco Salon. Tell me about that.
Something I'm super passionate about. Being a colorist for over 20 years, I obviously stood above people all the time and I was breathing in all the toxins. And back 20 years ago, it was something we never spoke about. Half the time I never wore gloves coloring hair. It wasn't something we dealt with. And it wasn't until I had my first daughter, who is now 17. Wow. When I delivered her, they said, "Well, you a smoker?" And I said, "No, I'm not." And they said, "Your placenta is black. You have the placenta of someone who was smoking." And then they said, "What do you do for a job?" And I said, I'm a colorist. I'm a hairdresser." And they said, "You have chemical poisoning." And at the time I was like, "Oh, yeah, whatever." I didn't really think too much of it. But during my second pregnancy, the same thing happened. And during my second pregnancy, I was constantly covered in hives. And I was working as a colorist then. I was actually doing a lot of product testing on different colors and different chemicals. And I got hives very, very bad. I had constant migraines. My throat swelled a lot. That was something I really became passionate about, is making my salon as low tox and my life as low tox as I possibly could. So color was one of the big things for me. I wanted to find a color and a brand that had as least chemicals in it as possible for my health, for my children's health, even the salon, like for my staff is a huge thing. Like breast cancer is one of the major things that hairdressers, you know, it's phenomenal in our industry. And half the time it's because we are surrounded by toxins and chemicals and you know, we are doing colors without putting gloves on. It's insane. So that's something I'm super passionate about.
Is it something that people are talking about a lot more now? Like you mentioned that you weren't talking about when you first started and it was just one of those things. And I know our awareness is getting so much better with internet and access to information in overdrive, but a lot of people are talking about it now at least.
Yeah, definitely. They're talking about it more, but 100% they could still be doing more.
Yeah.
I don't think people realize how toxic things are, particularly as a consumer. Like when you're looking on the back of your shampoo bottle, you're reading that big list of ingredients at the bottom, but are you actually understanding as a consumer what those things are? Yeah. No idea. You're putting them on your head, which is absorbing into your scalp. But it's just education, I guess. It comes down to learning what those things are. But for as a hairdresser, I'm surrounding myself with those things every single day. It is something that I have tried to implement in my salon a lot, the education to our customers and to our client base and to my staff. So protecting them and protecting me, because I sure as hell don't want to be surrounded by chemicals every day.
No, and I can't imagine your staff would either. And I wouldn't think, again, as a consumer, here I go, get my hair done. I wouldn't think for 1 minute that that would cause such significant distress on a body. And it's maybe that's naive of me to think that, and probably it is, but wow, that's an amazing thing to have gone through to
get. And even as a consumer, I could say like 9 out of 10, you probably wouldn't even know what brand of color is on your head.
No, definitely not. I'm going to ask now though. That's
for sure. Yeah. Yeah. You would have no idea, but you're putting it on your head.
So are there any brands in particular that we should be noting down that are important for that side of things?
Different salons use different brands for different reasons. Yeah. We did a lot of research when we chose our brands, and we use the greenest brand on the market, which is a company called Hue Verse by Evo, and it has one of the least chemical components on the market. And it's something that I took a lot of time personally to investigate and research on. Every salon is different, and they will use a particular brand for a particular reason. It's just something that I chose, and I can sleep at night.
Yeah, definitely. Well, yeah.
I talk about 20 years ago, I would go home with a headache every night, and you walk into hair salons and you have that distinct hair salon smell. You can walk into my hair salon and it doesn't smell like perm solution. It doesn't smell like a hair salon. It smells like air.
Funny that you said perm solution. First thing that came to my mind as you were just talking then, I thought that perm solution is a distinctive smell.
Acid and alkaline. Yep.
Yeah. But hey, this isn't the only thing that you've done in your salon. You've done some amazing sustainability changes to make it eco and low tox. Can you tell me about some of those specifically?
Well, we built it on everything that was recycled or repurposed or reused. So I hunted down, when I was building it, like jumble sales, people's renovated houses. I built, there's a big wall in there that was built from an old bridge. It's insane. We make our own cleaning products from scratch. It's got plants everywhere. What else can I tell you? There's so much stuff I actually forget. We recycle the hair. We give it to
about that. I've heard about that. How do you do that? Like, I don't know what you would do with that.
A lot of people don't realize that hair, like when we wash our hair, the water is absorbed into it. It's the biggest component for hair water absorption. So when you put it in your garden, it really retains the moisture. So we actually give it to a community garden and they use it to retain the moisture in the soil.
Wow. Who would have thought that?
It's really just finding a use for something. If everything can be reused or repurposed, we will find a use for it.
Hey there, sorry to interrupt this episode, but this will be real quick.
Little Birdie Hair Co. believes in one earth. Our salon is built on the foundations of sustainability and a reduced chemical approach to hair care. And we are proud to be the winner of the Best Eco Salon in Australia. Check out our website to see our sustainable practices in place. littlebirdiehairco.com.au.
And now back to the episode. I believe that you're now at a point where you either have or you haven't been accredited for the White Ribbon. Am I correct in saying that?
We're in the process of that. It takes 2 years to do, and it's quite a lot of work. So I think we're almost in our second year now. Mm-hmm. But that's something we're very excited and very proud to be a part of.
Yeah, I'd love to know a little bit about the process itself, because I think we need to raise some awareness around these types of accreditations and practices in the workplace. So what has the process been like for you? You know, it takes 2 years, but it's not just time. Mm-hmm. Tell me a little bit more about that process.
We are the first hair salon to be, will be accredited in Australia, which is huge for us. And being obviously a business that is predominantly women, we do employ men, but we are predominantly female-based business. It does take a long time. It's implementing a lot of strategies in the business and being able to educate our staff and how to educate our guests as well, and how we can best help them in situations and refer them on to the best help that we can find them. It does take a long time to do, but it's putting that time aside each week to be able to dedicate to getting the accreditation as well. We do have someone in the business who's like the team leader for the White Ribbon, and she sort of does most of it, and then we help her along as best we can.
What's been the biggest challenge in that process?
It was very expensive to do. I'd say the biggest challenge for that for us would be the time allocation, setting the time aside. It is a very, very long process, and you know, setting someone off the floor each week to put aside to be able to do that is like finding the time to say, sit down, you've got to do that for 5 hours now. It is hard. And getting out, we have such a large team that to implement those strategies, we have to have everyone together to do that. And with such a big team, it's hard finding time to get everyone together. So that's why it's taking us so long to do. But we do have 2 years to do it. So we definitely will have it done. It's on the priority list.
Of course. How many people have you got in your team now? You may have mentioned that earlier. Sorry.
29, I believe.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
What's it like managing 29 different souls, different personalities? Tell me a bit about that.
It's like a TV show.
That could be good or bad.
You know what? Everyone asks me that question. They're like, what's it like having 29 staff work for you? It's so cliche to say, but I actually do love it. I love coming to work every day. That I have such a wonderful team and a wonderful management team that the times I have gone away on holidays or the times I've not been in the salon, I really do miss it. I feel like my arm's been cut off. And there's such a good bunch of girls, and it's almost, and boys, I should say, it's such like a family that everyone gets along. They all hang out with each other after work, but definitely managing personalities can be hard. It is like a TV show sometimes, and we do have a group chat, so it does go off all day long, ping, 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 ping. So it is hard, but, you know, I guess when you've done it for so long, you don't know any different.
No, I guess that's right. So you mentioned that you can go away on holidays, which is a lot of what a lot of small business owners can't afford to do, essentially, even if you do have teams. Tell me what some of your tricks are for getting that confidence, for being comfortable. You mentioned you have a great management team. Is there anything else that led to that? Because I'm assuming it wasn't always that easy to step away from your business. Tell me how that process has been for you.
I make sure myself as a human being that I go away on my own somewhere in the world at least once or twice a year for a week. And I know that sounds very extravagant, but it's not. I can go to Stradbroke Island. I know if I'm not good, I'm no good to them. Yeah. So that's my time to turn my phone off. I zen out. I have absolutely nothing work-related on my mind at all. And it's giving them that trust. It's like saying, hey, I trust you to run my business. And they know when I'm at breaking point as well, when I'm like, hey, I'm, you know, the kids are hard work. It's too much for me. They will tell me, go away.
Yeah.
You know, they will actually take me off all the group chats. They will block my email for me. They know when I've had enough. So they're actually very good. They'll like, our booking programs on the phone. They'll take me off that. So I'm not tempted to go and look into the booking program. So it's definitely
that is supportive. I love a management team like that. That is fantastic.
We all support each other. We all know when every one of us we're at breaking point.
Yeah. And I think that's so easy. It's so easy to forget that sometimes when you're just in that mode of working and when you've got so many people, if you're not looking closely enough, there are going to be some that aren't going to get over the line. And I think when you've got good people, you really need to nurture that. I know many of my listeners are fighting the real fight, as are you, of running a household and businesses to very full-time jobs in anyone's language. What specifically works for you?
Single mother of four. My children are 17, 13, 8, and 20 months old. So, yeah, it is pretty full on at home, but I always do things that would help my future self. That's the key, I think. So I do things that help future Tennille. So I am very super organized. I plan my meals out 30 days in advance.
30 days?
Yes.
I can barely get the weekend sorted.
It helps future Tennille. I plan out my outfit the night before. I'm super organized, and I feel like it helps my mindset as well. I'm very clear and precise on what I need to do. I have a paper diary still.
Yep, there's something about pen and paper, isn't there, that just keeps us super, super organized. Digital's cool.
Yeah.
Sometimes we've got to put pen to paper.
Sometimes pen and paper. Yeah, I'm you know, even with the children, I'm very organized. I have it all diarized. I make lunches the night before. I have a shopping list that goes with that 30 days of dinners. I'm just that OCD with things like that. Because all these things help future Tennille. So when the day comes, I'm not stressing out.
I love that. That is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah.
Tell me about starting over again. I know I skipped over this a moment ago. So you started all over again. Was that
yes.
scary in terms of being a, you know, a single mom, a business owner? How did you feel about all that?
Was it scary? To be honest, it wasn't scary because in the course of that relationship, I'd felt so alone. Anyway, I was already doing those things. It was probably a little bit of relief. So starting over for me was just getting on with it, getting on with life.
You are motivating me so much in terms of that whole future Tennille, future looking what's going to benefit me. And you can see that in absolutely every step that you've taken and the stories that you've shared with us today. Like I can really see that. And I think that often as business owners, we get in our own heads. But if we can keep that space between it's just a moment and what's going to benefit us going forward. Yeah, I think
we are so resilient. And even as mothers, we are so resilient. What option do we have? The show goes on. We pick ourselves up and that show goes on.
100%.
And, you know, my children, I've got three girls and they are the most loving, respectful human beings. And they value me as a woman so much, and that the respect they have for women alone is outstanding. And I know they will grow up and be the best businesswoman. I'm so proud.
Well, they see you getting up every day, you know, without hesitation and keep moving forward. I have no doubt that that's played a big part in how they've shaped their personalities and how you've contributed to that in terms of that energy. So tell me, as a business owner, what is the things that you would impart on other business owners? What sorts of things do you think that they shouldn't go without when they're learning to become business owners themselves?
I would definitely say to take time out for you. Take time away where you turn your phone off. Take time away where you shut away from your emails. Take time away where you close your laptop down, because if you don't, it will take over your life. And if it takes over your life, you're done. You will never get that time back. And particularly mothers with small children or single mothers or mothers in general, you know, we need to spend some time with our children and to really put your boundaries in place. Like if you don't want to answer your phone after 6:30, you don't answer your phone after 6:30. If you need to take some time off to be with your son at soccer, you take that time off to be with your son at 6:30. This is time that you can't get back. So I think being very clear with your boundaries from the start, and pay yourself first.
Yay! I love hearing this one. Talk me through
pay
that.
Pay yourself first. You know what I hear of, and a lot of my girlfriends own businesses too, and I think if you cannot pay yourself first and if you cannot enjoy your business, why have a business?
Totally agree.
What's the point? You pay yourself first.
Yeah. And the thing I always say to people is that we find the money when we hire contractors. We find the money when we've got other people involved in our businesses. Why aren't we finding the money for ourselves? It's exactly Absolutely. The same thing. And you're right. Pay yourself first because you've got to enjoy it. You've got to love it. I'm so glad you said that. I'm so glad.
You've got to love it. You've got to love it.
My question to you is, do you still educate? Is that still part of the realm of your repertoire of things that you're doing?
No.
Okay.
People still do ask me. They still ask me, do you think you could come and teach a cutting seminar? No, I don't. I do still sometimes cut hair in my own salon or color hair. I'm more of a colorist than a cutter. Sometimes it kills me now. Like I do work on the floor if someone's sick, and what would you normally take me half an hour takes me 3 hours. It's not a passion of mine anymore. People and companies still sometimes ask me to come and do coloring or come and do education. It's not something I would want to do anymore. You know what? There's some really good looking 25 year olds who can cut hair and do amazing jobs. Get them to do it. I'm too old now.
You've done your time.
I've done my time. Yeah, no, definitely not.
So what does the future look like for you? What's the future Tennille doing? What are you doing now?
Future Tennille, I can't think of anything I could love more than doing what I'm doing now. I do envision myself. I was just saying to a coworker of mine this morning what my dream life would look like. And I would still always be doing this because this is where my heart is. And I could never imagine doing anything else, but I'll probably be doing it somewhere on maybe 30 acres from like a really old Queenslander with like maybe a glass of wine in my hand and my laptop resting on my legs.
Sounds like a great life.
My horse in the back paddock. I probably will be doing that, but this is what I know. I don't know any other life. So this is what I love. I feel at home with other hairdressers. I feel at home in this industry. This is my home.
Oh, you can hear it. It's resonating through what you're saying. Is there any room for expansion, or are you happy with the way things are?
The million-dollar question.
Yeah.
Everyone says, I've got 4 salons, and everyone says, are you going to do another one? I think I said that after the second one, I wasn't going to do any more, but I can't stop. I look forward to the day when I could just lay in bed at nighttime and just sleep like normal people do. But my mind, I just can't stop. It goes into overdrive, and I get bored so easily that I keep looking for new things. And I love business and I love venturing. So I listen, not for now, but never say never.
No, I agree. But I also love that when you're on a good thing, that people aren't afraid to say, well, this is it. Do you know what I mean? Like, instead of, you know, feeling the pressure to continually upgrade and change and evolve, when you've got your perfect niche exactly where you want it to be and you're so happy in that space, I love hearing that this is exactly what it looks like for now. This is the perfect life, but never say never.
Yeah, and I think when you've found a really good formula, say with the salons, it's really just replicating a formula. It's just replicating that formula. So who knows?
I often say to business owners that when they're looking to expand, it's exactly that. Get that correct first. Once you've got that, it's literally a copy and paste. And then you know. Yeah. And I'm assuming you've seen that with each of your salons as you've been to replicate them. So that's fantastic.
Yeah, definitely.
So tell me, Tennille, when you're not working on your business or in your business, what can we find you doing besides traveling?
Oh gosh, renovating my house.
Oh, okay. What sort of renovations?
I'm a keynote manager. Yeah. I'm aspiring to be on the block, but they haven't called me up yet, so I'm still waiting.
That'll come. I'll tag them in the show notes.
Please tag them. Oh gosh, what I love. I read, I love antiques, I cook, I walk my dog down the waterfront here, I play with my kids.
Busy.
That's probably about it, to be honest. I sleep.
I love that. I sleep.
I do 4 loads of washing.
Yeah, they're hobbies, aren't they? They're certainly hobbies.
Yeah, yeah.
Loads of washing.
Yeah, I'm at uni as well on top of that, so I'm probably...
In your spare time.
In my spare time, what's more little time I have.
What are you studying?
I'm doing interior design, so I've got 2 more years. I deferred during COVID and haven't been back yet, so that's probably should be on the list somewhere in between there.
In between the sleep and the playing with the kids and the 4 loads of washing and running.
Yeah, finishing uni degree.
Yeah, yeah, why not? Finish uni degree. Put that in your pen and paper, on your pen and paper, and get it done. One other question that I've been asking a lot of my guests this season is, if you could have someone play you in a movie about your life, who would it be and why?
Oh gosh, that's a tricky question. I'd probably say Amy Schumer.
Oh, tell me about that.
Well, I think I'm hilarious sometimes.
Yeah.
She's pretty funny.
Yeah, she's so funny.
She is so funny. I feel like we have the same witty sense of humor, Amy Schumer and I, so probably her.
Oh, I love that response. I really, really do. Tennille, it has been great getting to know you and learning a bit about your business. I look forward to seeing what more you do, because I'm sure there's more on the cards for you. But keep doing what you're doing. Like, I think the sustainability stuff, I think, you know, the initiatives that you've taken to look after not only your own health, but those around you in this industry where it's so prevalent that so many can become sick so often. I think that's absolutely amazing.
Oh, thank you. I really appreciate it.
And thanks for taking some time to come and have a chat.
Thank you so much. I'll talk to you soon.
Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Amy.
To learn more about the boring shit you need to know in business, head to my website, www.amybajada.com.au/podcast, where you will find all my latest and greatest podcast episodes for you to enjoy. To be notified of new podcast episodes when they become available, be sure to hit that notification where you're listening to this podcast. Stay well, my friend.